Welcome to No More Booze, the podcast. I'm Olivia Farrelly, and in every episode, I explore the role that alcohol has in our lives. I interview people who have decided to live their life with no more booze. We'll explore their relationship with alcohol, how it made their life better, how it made their life worse, any lessons they've learned along the way, and what advice they would give to others who are contemplating a life without alcohol. So whether you are sober curious, you're sober serious, or you're already living your life alcohol-free, this podcast will provide inspiration and motivation as you begin to untangle and reassess your relationship with the booze. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to No More Booze, the podcast. Today, I have a beautiful friend of mine, Carmelan Brennan, who is 18 months off the booze from Dublin. Carmelan, how are you?
I'm good, Olivia. How are you?
I'm great, not a bother. So I know quite a bit about your journey because I have been around for a good lot of it. So do you maybe just want to give a little introduction to the listeners and say as much or as little as you want?
Yes, so I'm Carmelan. I'm from Dublin. I've been living abroad for the last 9 years. Yeah, gave up at the end of December 2024. So yeah, 18 months. I've an eight-year-old and a 12-year-old and a lovely husband.
Okay, gorgeous. So they're kind of similar in age, our kids. So we're kind of at the same life stages. So go on, tell us, bring us back. Rewind back to booze and how it treated you in the very beginning. What was it like? Was it a love affair? Was it a rocky love affair? How did it begin back in the day?
I suppose, like a lot of myself, like me and my peers, it was a lot of fun. You know, I loved it. And I think it gave you confidence, especially when you're growing up and, you know, joining college and new jobs and all that. It was so much fun because it just helped to build the confidence and I suppose take away the nerves and meet new people and all of that. So, and I suppose it makes you be a bit more crack than you'd normally be, or you might do things you wouldn't normally do, you know. So yeah, I loved it. And also living abroad, it was a great way of meeting people, you know, because there's functions or events or barbecues or whatever that happens in people's houses and everyone has a few drinks together. And yeah, so it was just kind of part of my life.
Yeah, it is a bit of a crutch. But come here, do you know what I've been thinking about a lot recently? I've rejoined the gym, and the gym that I was in actually 20 years ago. And I think I've mentioned this in another podcast, but what I'm seeing now is that there's such a gym culture that obviously I was having babies during, but it has kind of really arose in the last, certainly in the last, I'd say maybe 10 years, I don't know the timeline of it, but in Ireland. But like, so I'm there every morning at 6:30, right? I leave my house at 6. And it's just, they're all young ones. They're all getting their dopamine from being in there, looking fab, doing gorgeous things, blah, 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 blah. And I was just kind of reflecting over the last little while. So like, I would have gone out probably Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, maybe not even the Thursday, Friday, but Saturday, certainly Friday, Saturday. You would have just recovered until kind of Wednesday and then gone about it again. Like there was no space nearly in our time for that level of gym. So we were unfortunate that we missed the gym era, Carmelan. What do you think?
We totally did. I only started really gymming when I lived abroad, you know, and I really got into it. But I think I was living in South Africa and, you know, the drinking culture there is quite similar to the way it was here probably 10 or 15 years ago. And I suppose because there's a lot of sunshine, you tend to find yourself having drinks in the sun and whatever. But I got into a bad habit of like, even if you did have drinks like on a Wednesday night, I'd still get up and gym the next morning, you know?
Yeah.
And because I was doing that, it was okay, you know, and I was able to manage it. But it was only when I took it away, I saw how much better gym and how your physical being is without it. But it's a lovely thing. I've joined the gym since I came back to Ireland and it's lovely to see so many young and older people as well in the gym. It's just lovely. There's I think that the age that I grew up, I was 50 this year, and I think that that era has that kind of old trait has been broken by a lot of the new young people coming through because they're just not drinking as much, and it's
No, they're
lovely to
not.
see.
Oh, it's lovely to see. And they're doing things that are more in line with kind of better mental health, better outcomes, you know, better longevity, all that kind of stuff as well. You were saying there just around, I know that wild horses couldn't have dragged me to the gym with a hangover. I've said a million times that I would be in absolute bits. I barely even could go for a walk. And actually, a lot of people I talk to, they are able to like really keep going on the like when they're hungover or whatever, and they still do the gym sessions and stuff like that. But did you notice then that your output and all that kind of stuff increased when you gave up the booze?
Oh, so much more. Now, when I say, like, I wouldn't have necessarily had a hangover as such. I would have maybe had two or three glasses of wine. It wasn't hectic, but still, when you look back on it, that's still maybe a bottle of wine. Do you know what I mean? Depending on the size of the glasses that you pour. But yeah, no, my output massively improved. I definitely, my fitness improved. My overall fitness improved because everything was less of a struggle.
Yeah, it
I was
really
able to
is.
give more, you know. Able to throw more into each session, and you know, I play tennis as well. I just found my fitness much better.
Yeah. So it was good, you know, when you were a teenager, you went to university, it was all a bit of crack. Your new job, or like in your jobs in your 20s, all a bit of crack. Went over, moved abroad, helped you socialize. At what point did it begin to go, these costs are way outweighing the benefits?
I suppose the last 5 years is where it's really kind of been winking at me almost, you know. So I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2019, and obviously that sh it shakes everything to the core, you know, shook my husband and my kids and all of that. And I definitely would have drank a little bit more than I would have in the past during that time, which I'm not very proud of when I look back now. So I definitely was leaning a bit more on the white wine and, you know. And I think, you know, since then I've really noticed, I was on hormone therapy, after the breast cancer and after all the surgeries and that, and that puts you into medical menopause. And I had no idea that the alcohol that I was consuming was making all of those horrible symptoms 10 times worse. Nobody ever told me, I suppose, in any of the conversations I had with any of the doctors, you know. So I was actually making all those symptoms so much worse by actually drinking alongside it. And then I also had no idea that breast cancer can be linked to alcohol. And I only really discovered that when I gave up drinking, because I did a couple of courses and challenges, one of them with yourself. And I think it was only then that I started to see a lot of the information that alcohol can be linked to breast cancer and how high it can be in certain countries. And that kind of shook me. Now, I've no idea if it's anything to do with my diagnosis, you know. But it definitely makes me reflect, you know. And the other thing is, in the last 5 years, I've really been battling with gastro issues, so stomach problems. And I've gone for so many tests and so many scopes and spoken to so many doctors about, well, what could be the cause of it? And of course, they could never really find anything. And it was always like, in the end, they kind of put it down to IBS because they kind of really couldn't really pin it on anything else. But once I gave up alcohol, all of that disappeared. Like, I mean, overnight, you know, it just disappeared. So yeah, I think I just got to a point where when I did have a big night, I was really battling with the hangovers, the anxiety that I found, and it was probably because I was also on the hormone therapy as well, but the anxiety after a night out was just horrific. I mean, I'd be snappy and cranky, and it was just awful. And then obviously I had the stomach issues. So it just got to a point where I was like, right, enough is enough. I'm going to try and take away the alcohol and see, does that make a difference? And I suppose I wasn't prepared for the benefits that I got because it was overnight. You know, within about 2 weeks, the anxiety was gone. The stomach issues pretty much stopped overnight. And that shocked me.
Like profound. Sorry, I'm talking. I'm
Absolutely.
r r writing here like a little nerd. But come here. So, why do you think, Carmelan, that doctors are very reluctant to bring up that association between the cancers and alcohol? And you had never heard it. It was only you went on your own kind of mission of finding things out.
Yeah. I was really shocked at that. I mean, like, none of the doctors that I ever went to ever really said to me, you know, do you drink? How much do you drink? They never really questioned it, you know. Now, I'm not sure if they did, would I have given them the answer? But like,
Yeah.
I wasn't bad drinking. I was having a couple of glasses of wine, maybe 3 to 4 nights a week. It wasn't hectic drinking, but you know, it's just shocking that nobody delves into it, you know,
Yeah.
in any detail.
Yeah, and it's funny, we're in the same community, you're in my community, and one of the ladies has talked about talking to her oncologist about this, and she said she went, she anyway, there's a link in her family, and she went, she goes to him every year, and she went to him and she basically said, you little scamp, you. She said, why didn't you tell me about the link here? And because he was like, oh my God, you look great, and what are you doing? And she was like, I gave up the booze. And she was like, why don't you tell people? And he was like, it's very, very delicate. He said, I used to tell it, and I got such pushback from people that I've just
Yeah.
given up telling it. Do you know? And
Yeah.
I think we're in that era now. We're kind of stuck. I know I shared something on Instagram this week about that we're kind of in the lag space between, or like people kind of knowing what the real health harms are. Well, I suppose the real health harms being found out, and the general population getting to know. So the information kind of trickling down through that. But it is, it's a very, very, you know, if you said to me, like, oh, you know, such and like your bread is causing your gastro issues and you gave it up, nobody be offended, you know. But with alcohol,
No.
it's a totally different commodity. It doesn't, all the usual rules don't really apply to it.
They don't. And I think because it's ingrained in so many people's lives, it's very hard to imagine your life without it. And people also don't want to be told. They don't want to hear it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it'll come eventually, but like now, if you pick up a cigarette, people will look at you and go, are you mad? You know. You're still smoking, even though you know all the health risks. Whereas people don't, like, that hasn't come to, it hasn't come to people yet
Yeah.
about alcohol. And it's funny, like, I worked in Finland about 20, probably about 20 odd years ago, 25 years ago. And back
Right.
then, there was no alcohol advertising allowed. You know, you could only buy alcohol in certain places. So they knew, like, 25 years ago, you know. You would never see an ad on TV. You'd never see an ad on a billboard, you know. Like, there's still bars and all that, but you know, you would never know about the alcohol apart from going into the bar.
Isn't that mad? Somebody was
Yeah.
recently telling me that they were away. Oh, they were in Canada, and that alcohol isn't the only place you can buy alcohol is in a liquor store. Like you can't buy it in the supermarket or anywhere else. That it's just confined to the liquor store. So you're not purposely going like into liquor stores if you're alcohol free, you know. So that it never crosses your mind then if you pop into a shop or
Yeah, of
whatever.
course.
Whereas here, it's the same. And as we always say here, Carmelan, on this podcast, nobody judges anybody who drinks. We're just telling our story
Not
about
at
how good
all.
it is for us.
Yeah,
Isn't that it?
no,
And
absolutely. I think the judgment is actually the other way around, Olivia. I think, you know, people kind of look at you and go, you've given up. Did you have a problem? And you feel like shouting from the rooftops. No, but it wasn't serving me.
oh yeah, absolutely. Until you give it up, you have no way of
Yeah.
knowing. I actually came off a call to, I just before we got on here, and I was talking to somebody, and they were just like, "But I really want to do it, but I just they don't know. They just don't know what's the joys and the goodies that are."
Sorry, Olivia. The one thing that really helped me was I started listening about 6 months before I gave up. I started listening. I don't know how I got into them, but I started listening to some sober podcasts. I must have fallen into them for some reason. But then I started to get a real interest in it. And what really fascinated me about the sober podcasts was the guests on it were normal, everyday people. running about their lives, doing normal things, raising their kids, and really just battling with, how the impact alcohol was having on them. Like, they weren't what you'd assume people with serious problems with alcohol to be. Do you know what I mean? They weren't stereotypical alcoholic. They were very much normal, everyday people. It was just having such a bad impact on their lives. And I think that's what gave me the courage to actually go, do you know something? I'm going to do this. Because they were all like talking about their successes and the learnings on the way. And, so that's what kind of gave me the strength to do it, to go, right, there actually is life beyond alcohol.
And it's such a heartwarming, beautiful thing to be able to hear people's voices and people that we can resonate with, people who look and feel and sound and have the same experiences as we do, and then their success gives us, it's like a domino effect. Their success makes us think that we can do it too.
Totally. And I think, if you're in a headspace where you're thinking about giving up, you will 100% relate to some of these people on those podcasts, because I know I did. I was like, oh my goodness, that's me, when I heard certain stories. So yeah, it's I'd highly recommend that to people if they are even thinking about it, is just start listening to the some of the sober podcasts. And there's so much literature out there now. It's brilliant. There's so many books you can read and so many different things you can so many things you can just tap into,
And tell us any books that really, really resonated with you.
I loved The Sober Diaries. That was just because that just threw so much humor into it. I loved Drink by Anne Dowse Johnson.
Me too.
And I'm actually in the middle of listening to one at the moment. A girl walks into a bar. So that's really good. Yeah, they'd be my top at the moment.
Amazing. I love that. Just back to what you said. Sorry, I want to kind of unpick the gastro things. So, like, you have these symptoms, you go to all these doctors, nobody can find a cure. It's absolutely baffling to everybody, including yourself. And next thing, you give up the booze and sayonara to all the symptoms. They're all gone.
Yeah, it was literally overnight. And even because I went to two different gastroenterologists, and nobody said, how much are you drinking? The only thing they'd I would if drink would ever come up would be if they said, right, we'll try you on such and such antibiotic, and I'd be like, can I have a glass of wine with that? That's how drink would come up. But they never asked, which is quite shocking.
And my own kind of gastro issues, when I lived in Australia, and it was a very, very heavy drinking part of my life, I had horrendous acid reflux. And I remember going to like the pharmacy being like, oh, what will I take for this? And they were like, what's your diet like? And I was like, well, I drink every day of the week, practically. But then as soon as I stopped drinking every day of the week because I left Australia, I was actually fine again. It all disappeared.
And I think it's, obviously it depends on what you drink, but my nemesis was white wine, and I think I literally burnt the esophagus off myself. I think I had so much acid reflux, and just so much bloating and the odd stomach pain, but just so much ongoing symptoms that, it just upset my whole everything, in my daily life. And it was only on when I took it out that I realized, oh my goodness, this is what it was all.
And they say that it does affect and impact every system in our body. So like our sleep cycles, our neurotransmitters, our digestive system, they're the only ones I can think of off the top of my head,
I was on, it's kind of, I think you call it Nexium here, but I was on an equivalent of that in South Africa. And I've stopped taking that. I think, like you said, my sleep, oh my goodness, when my head hits that pillow now, I do not wake up until morning. Whereas before, when I was drinking, you'd be up and then you'd be struggling to get back to sleep, in the middle of the night. And yeah, my sleep has massively, massively benefited. And as I said, the anxiety, again, that was like somebody flicked a light switch. It was literally gone overnight. I just feel this calmness all the time. There's not the peaks and troughs that there were before. It's just a relative calm pretty much all the time.
And I think that's something we all kind of see, we all notice, we all like you're not, it's not the peaks and troughs, it's that beautiful kind of steady calm all of the time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Stunning. So bring us back to the kind of preceding months before December 2024 and what that kind of looked like. You know, we always talk here about like the stages of change. So you would have been in kind of contemplation forward slash preparation mode. So how did that look to you?
Yeah, I suppose I didn't change an awful lot of my drinking during that time, but I started to grow a huge awareness of, okay, maybe I'm drinking a bit more than I should be. And as I say, it wasn't hectic amounts. It was maybe one or two glasses of wine on a Thursday, and then definitely a few glasses on a Friday. And then in South Africa, people have barbecues and they tend to start around lunchtime, and that they can go on till all night. So you typically do something like that on a Saturday. And then it might be a lunch on a Sunday with a few glasses of wine. It wasn't over the top. But I think, as I said, my awareness was growing and growing. Excuse me. And because I was listening to the podcasts and started reading the books, I was like, okay, what I'm drinking, the amount I'm drinking is definitely more than the recommended amount for women. And it started to make me question how I was feeling on a daily basis. I didn't know any of the facts about it until I gave up, but I just started to question it. And I was like, right, I've got these really bad stomach issues. I can't get to the bottom of it. Maybe I'll just take a break from the drink and see, does that make a difference? You know, I think because I'd exhausted all the other avenues, all the medical scopes and tests and all of that. So it just made me go, you know, I'm ready to do this. So I actually gave up. I did dry January, and I picked January obviously because nobody really questions it, and I didn't want any questions asked. And it just seemed simple, you know. Yeah, and I started researching going onto a course as well, because one thing I heard from a lot of the podcasts is that if you try and do it by yourself without any support, it can make your journey a little bit harder in giving up. So I started doing a bit of research. I had a couple of calls with people. So that was kind of, it was kind of slowly building in my mind. I still had many drinks over the Christmas period, but I decided on the 31st of December that morning, I said, right, that's it. I'm not having any more drinks. I didn't want to drink on New Year's Eve because I didn't want the 1st of January to be hungover. Yeah, and that was it. I just said, right. And I knew I was starting. I can't remember what it was, the 2nd of January, I was starting the 30-day challenge, which was the first program I did. And that was just fantastic because the amount of information and guest speakers and support from all the other women in the group, who are all pretty much just like you, just want to take a break from it. That was phenomenal, you know, because you feel like you're not alone and you feel like you're, you know, not the only one doing this. So that was brilliant.
Yeah. So it's what you're kind of describing to me, which is how we experience change, is that we develop awareness of the pattern of behavior and then we begin to change the pattern. So we just pick and choose something different. So the awareness, the awareness either can be like a dawn or like as in it comes upon you over a couple of months, or it can be something fast and instant. I know Michael Bernard Beckwith calls them, I'll remember it anyway, I'll think about it. But there's two, Satori and anyway, I'll think of them now in a few seconds. But as in something comes upon you very fast, or you have that kind of slow realization. But awareness, and then we change our patterns of behavior. So the first course you did, it was Sarah Rusbach's, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the 30-day challenge, the January challenge, and that was phenomenal. It was
Yeah.
just really good. It was just so informative, and yeah, the guest speakers she had about, you know, the impact of what alcohol can do to you, like she had Libby Weaver on, you know, Dr. Libby Weaver, and so there was just so much information. It was like an overload of information, but it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And she did daily Facebook. You're part of a Facebook, private Facebook group, and she did daily posts and checking in with you to see how you're doing. And so that was really good. You know, there was, I think, about 700 people on the challenge that I did. So when you, like, if you were battling with anything, you'd put a post up on the Facebook group and go, I'm having a bad day today, I'm struggling. And then you'd get all these messages of support. So it was really powerful. But then that's where I met you as well, because you were, I think you were one of the guest speakers.
I
And
was my
yes,
lovely dulcet Irish tones were coming across it
there
at you.
you go. There you go. And then I joined your 100-day challenge, and I loved the 100-day challenge because we were, I think we were seven in the group, maybe eight. And it was really personal and really, you know, it was like a little family for the 100 days. And that was brilliant because it was also a lot longer than the first challenge. So that got me, I think, until the end of May. And at that point, I was 5 months in and I was like, I'm not going back. Like, because it's like, the one thing I've learned, and I know it's something you always say as well, is that the benefits are incremental, and the longer you do it, each day builds upon the next. So you're constantly building on the benefits. You know, like, you're not going to get this big aha moment, or I certainly didn't get this big aha moment of go, wow, this is different today. But you'll suddenly go, oh my goodness, look how good my sleep is. Look how good my stomach feels. Look how good, you know. Look how good I feel on a Saturday morning after being out last night when I didn't drink, you know. So yeah, having those programs, I would say, is my biggest piece of advice to anybody who's ever thinking about giving up drinking, because it just makes you do the work. Like, I saw a post from, it's an English lady, I don't know if you saw it, but she put a post up last week saying, I don't drink to get drunk, I drink to not be sober. And I just thought that was a really powerful saying, because, you know, no matter what we all say, we're not drinking to numb something out. There's always something going on in your life. Like, it might be stress, it might be a relationship issue, it might be whatever. But, you know, we've been brought up, certainly my age group, and conditioned to believe that alcohol was the answer. You know, oh, have a drink. You know, it's just an easy way of kind of calming the nerves, you know. That would be my biggest piece of advice, people, because doing a course like that helps you delve into the reasons why you might be drinking, and what is it that, you know, what is it that you're avoiding by numbing with a few glasses of wine. And until you do that work, I think it's very hard to sustain a long-term view with no alcohol, because there's always that risk that you might flip back into it.
And did you uncover the reason why you drank?
I think a lot of it was around confidence. I think I've discovered I'm not as confident as I thought I was. You know, I think it always gave, t always took the edge off when you'd go out to a group. You know, if you were meeting people in a bar or in a restaurant, always took the edge off, you know. And I suppose any sort of stress in your life, you know, I know definitely around the breast cancer time, I definitely drank more than I did before. So that was purely a coping mechanism, you know. So I think any sort of stress can bring it on, or if you're feeling like you need a boost, or you just need to take the edge off, it was always the easy thing to turn to. And I think there's an element of, because it's being ingrained in us from an early age that, you know, alcohol is the answer, we don't necessarily learn the right coping mechanisms to deal with it. And again, that's something that the courses that I did, it helps you develop and kind of build on those coping mechanisms, so you don't have to turn to alcohol when you face a hard, something hard in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me, so thank you. That was really honest and like really honest. And you know, I wasn't as confident as I thought I was, right? So that was what, how many years ago? Do you notice, right, that your confidence has grown, but it's a much more authentic confidence now?
Absolutely, yeah. I am much more of an introvert than I ever thought I was. And I think my whole dynamic has changed. So I definitely have more confidence, but I have more confidence in stuff that matters to me.
Oh, I
Where,
love it.
yeah, whereas I was, when I was drinking, I was almost more about pleasing other people. Whereas now, I love nothing better now than sitting in on a Friday night with, you know, a nice cup of tea and a movie on, you know, that way. So it definitely changes your perspective on things, you know. Definitely how you spend your time is different. But now I'm more confident in that to go, no, but this is what I want to do. I'm not going to, I used to go to the opening of an envelope because I was invited and I felt great, I've been invited. Whereas now I'm much more choosy about how I spend my time. And it's for me and my husband and my kids.
So your priorities, they kind of change. Like your priorities were always your priorities, but they're kind of they're more to the forefront now. You said there as well, I'm much more of an introvert than I ever thought I was, says every single person who's given up the
I think the amount of confidence it must give you, like, it's frightening, actually.
It does. It kind of does the heavy lifting as well. We outsource all of our power towards the booze too. Carmelan, you talked there about like the 100 days, and like you started on Sarah's course in Dry January, and then you continued on to do the 100 days with me. Is there actually the call I was on just before this? They were like, "Why do we do 100 days? Right? Why do you say 100 days is a kind of a sufficient amount of time?" From your perspective, what did the 100 odd days teach you?
It gave me, so I suppose for me, the 30-day support wasn't enough. I wanted more. I wanted something that I could kind of say, right, I knew I wanted to get to the 6-month mark and see how I felt at that point. And the 100 days almost got me there. And obviously, like, the community that was in our group was just wonderful. People, like, we still have our WhatsApp group. And, you know, if you're just, it just gives you that sense of confidence that you can ask a question in the group. You know, if there's anyone having a bad day, everyone rallies in behind them. We had our weekly calls, and that part was just brilliant because there was always a checkpoint each week, to find out how people are doing and any challenges people have had. And then you hear other people's stories, and it gives you confidence to go, okay, well, now I know how to handle that situation if it comes up. So.
Exactly. And it's like that. So you think you're the only one that this is happening to. Oh my God, there's never a person who's ever been born who feels exactly the way I do. And then you open up WhatsApp and everybody feels exactly like you do. And there's such grace and compassion and humility in the people that you're connecting with. It's just, and they really, really want you to succeed. And sometimes the belief, when other people believe in you, it spurs you on and it helps you believe in yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's like-minded people, because I had all the support in the world from my husband and my kids and all my friends around me, but it's having like-minded people who are going through the same thing makes it just takes it to a deeper level, because you know you can ask questions and you know that the other people are feeling the same things, or that they can relate to it, or that they've gone through it. You know, so it just makes it so important.
Yeah, it really does. And so when you gave up afterwards, like how did people re react? You said there that people were very supportive. Were like 99% of people supportive, or was there anyone who kind of didn't really know where you were coming from?
No, I think a lot of people, everyone was very supportive in my close friends. Absolutely. I think a few people, obviously, they never really asked, but you could tell by their facial expressions going, kind of, there must be a why behind this. Why are you doing it? Do you know what I mean? But, you know, I kind of felt the why is mine and I don't need to explain it to anybody. I never had a situation where people were pressurizing me to drink. And I was very, I suppose, very lucky in that situation. I wasn't in a friend group that people were pushing a load of booze, going, oh, would you stop? Would you stop? I think, you know, I'm sure that's very difficult for some people to navigate. But no, I think everybody around me was super supportive.
Yeah, I loved your sentence there. It was like, the why is mine.
It is, though, like, it's, you know. Like, I don't need to explain to everybody why I'm giving it up. I just found it wasn't working for me anymore. And the health benefits, just because they were, as I say, they were overnight, the benefits that I felt. And that's, I suppose, once you start feeling the benefits, it makes it so much easier to keep going, because you know what you're giving. You really do know what you're giving up once you've discovered it all.
And I think that's probably the most difficult one for people to actually grasp, that probably the most common thing that I encounter. Let's say I do a paid consultation with somebody, right? And they come to me and like we're just literally assessing the initial relationship with alcohol, whatever. And the first thing nearly that they always say is they have so much fear. They really want to do it. But there's so much fear involved in it. Can you talk to the fear? Like, what would you say to them?
Absolutely. I would say to them, give it a try. Make sure you give it a try, but do it with support. I think I said it to you on one of your programs that you do feel so out of place at the beginning. You feel like you have to grow a new skin because the old person that used to be the life and soul of the party and having the crack, and you know, that's hard because you're kind of looking back at that person, and there is a bit of a grieving process that you go through to go, well, I'm not, you know, fun Bobby in the corner anymore. But so yeah, it is tough. I totally get the fear, but it's like anything you do differently. Once you do, it's like when you lose a family member or you give up smoking, or you have to go through everything that you do of importance with or without that whatever it is you're giving up. And once you do that, like your first wedding, your first big night out, once you start to learn, actually, it's actually grand to go to a concert with no alcohol. And I'm actually loving it because I'm not queuing up for the bathrooms all the time, you know, or I'm not standing queuing for a bar with like 100 people ahead of me. Once you start to do all of those things, you start to go, actually, this, I can do this, you know, and you start to realize, and they all build on each other the more you do it. You know, your first night out is a bit hard, and your first dinner with friends, particularly if you've got groups of friends who are like really heavy drinkers and they're not understanding why you don't want to give up. But the other thing I'd say is the first drink is always the toughest because you walk in somewhere and it's that first drink. But one thing I've learned is that after that first drink, nobody gives a shit about what you're drinking.
No,
It's only you
absolutely.
who worries about it. You know, once everybody's ordered their drinks, then it's move on. They're all talking about something else, and it's only you who's thinking about it, you know. And I remember at the beginning, I used to drink quite a few alcohol. It's funny, I never drank beer really when I was drinking, but I'm not really a big spirits drinker, so I tend to drink, you know, non-alcoholic Heineken Zero or Corona Zero or something. And at the beginning, I would have maybe four or five in a night out, and then I'd be like, God, I'm running to the loo all the time. And in the end, I'm like, no, two's my max now. If I even have them at all, you know, that way I'll have two, and then I might have a cup of tea,
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
you learn, I suppose. Do you know what I mean? You learn that I don't want to be drinking as much as them because you don't want to be paying the same amount for something that you're probably not loving as much as everyone's loving the alcohol version, you know. And yeah, really, after that first drink, nobody cares.
No. And I always say, once you say no to the first drink, that's your night done completely. And actually, I had a call with somebody the other night, and they were worried about a pub that they were going to on a night out with all their pals. And I ended up looking up the bar. There was 15 non-alcoholic options in the bar that they were
Wow.
going to. And I was like, surely you can have, even if you had all 15 of them, you're still going to be absolutely fine. Do you know what I mean? So there's a way and means around
Absolutely.
everything. We just need to get out of our heads and maybe share it a little bit with people as well.
Absolutely. And as they say, once you get past that first event, whether it's the first dinner or the night out or a wedding or whatever it might be, then the next one becomes easier. Then the next one's even easier than that. And then it just becomes the norm. And people stop asking what you want. You just order your own drink first or whatever it might be. Like I wouldn't really get into rounds with people now because what's the point? Do you know what I mean? You buy your own drink and you sort yourself out and just say, no, I'll stay by myself. But yeah, once you go through all the little events that where drink is high pressured, then you're totally fine. It gets easier and easier and easier.
Easier and easier, and then the benefits build and build and build and build and compound, and then the next thing you know, you're this incredible version of yourself that you never expected to be, and like life is still the same or whatever, but it's just the peace, the joy, it's just so much more readily accessible.
Absolutely. And I think because I've done a lot of the work and I've learned coping mechanisms that don't include alcohol, I think you just find that calmness stays so much more stable because you're actually able to manage the stuff that life throws at you now, and you don't react the way you might have reacted before. You find that nice balance where you just have this kind of equilibrium all the time. It's wonderful.
Any coping mechanisms that stick out to you? Like, what was been the one that's helped you the most?
Exercise, that's my number one. Exercise, definitely, because it gives you that dopamine high. I do my exercise first thing in the morning because for me, if I don't do it then I'll never do it. I'll find every excuse not to. So for me, dopamine, getting it through exercise has been fantastic. That's the main one for me.
Yeah, I know. I'd absolutely agree with that. I'm back to it. I did a spin class on Monday morning at 6:30, and I swear to God, I was in it. It was like being at a rave in the 90s, right? The music, she was deadly. Laura, hiya, Laura. You're a ledge. Come here. It was fab. And it's the slow release of that then for the rest of the day. And you're
You
like, you
feel
know what?
brilliant about yourself.
Oh. You're like, I could take over the world. Come here, do you remember I was talking about the two phases of growth there that Dr. Michael Bernard Beckwith, I just looked it up. So it's Satori and Kensho. And it's the Satori one is that growth happens through spontaneous insight, often called an aha or an awakening moment. That was me. Right. I was a combination of both. I had an aha moment on a hilltop in Spain. And then the Kensho is well, it was this as well. Like it was growth through pain or hardship. So it's a slow burn involving challenges like heartbreak, illness, career setbacks, all those kind of things. So sometimes we have these catalysts that are A, a slow burn, or B, they're just this kind of very instant insight, and our lives are changed forever. Like your life has been changed forever since the 31st of December, 2024.
Like I used to never be able to imagine a life without alcohol. Now I could never imagine a life with alcohol in it. I just couldn't imagine going back because the benefits are so much, so good. I would never give that up willingly.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And this platform that I have and that you so kindly have come on, it's literally not in a, evangelical way or not in a cultish way or, it's just, darlings, your life will be so much better. It doesn't need to be this hard. It really
I know.
doesn't.
And you'd love to tell people, friends and stuff like that who you can see going through stuff. But at the same time, I'm not sure I would have appreciated if back when I was drinking, that way. So you just have to be gentle about it and just talk about your own situation and how good you feel. And that's all you can do,
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else that you would like to recommend for the listeners, just based on the joy and peace and harmony, serenity, all those gorgeous things that you've experienced in the last 18 months?
I suppose the only other thing is I've heard a lot of people say that, oh, I think I'll just try and moderate. I'll just try and be a moderate drinker.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty much a one-way street.
Yeah.
Like, if you were a medium to heavy drinker at any point in your life for any prolonged period of time, you can't really reverse and all of a sudden go and I'm just going to have one glass tonight. It just doesn't work that way. Like, I don't know if it's a mental psyche or a physical psyche, but it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And anybody, because I've done so many of the programs and so many people have tried it and nobody succeeds. Like, if they try and go back drinking and moderate, within about 2 to 3 weeks, they are back to full pelt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be the one learning I've had is that there is no such thing as moderation for people who have been a medium drinker or a heavy drinker.
Yeah, those kind of no-off switch drinkers. If you have found yourself, if that's some if that's the language you use to describe yourself, I just have no off switch. You're not going to miraculously develop an off switch. It will never happen. And then it's just the acceptance of that is what really helps people move towards alcohol-free living. It's the acceptance, the grief, because we do have to go through this pattern of grief when you let something go.
You do, absolutely. And you do grieve for that fun person that you might have been, but then you look back and go, Jamie, did I really do that? You know, so with all the goods, there were so many times where you probably look back and went, oh God, I wish I hadn't done that, you know. So you have to remind yourself of that as well, because sometimes you can look at it through kind of rose-tinted glasses, you know, and go, wasn't it always wonderful? And there were the great times, you know, there really were. It's so many fun times, but there was also the lows as well. And then you remind yourself of the crankiness. My kids said to me after I gave up, about 2 weeks or so after I gave up, they said, Mom, you're so much happier. And I was like, wow, okay. If ever there was a reason to keep going, that was it, you know.
Isn't that and kids know, and I've worked with kids for a very long time. I have two of my own. I was one at one stage, but they really do feel energy,
Absolutely.
and they
Absolutely.
know when they change.
They do. And I mean, I suppose there's no distraction. The other thing I suppose is that I've so much time back on my hands. And you don't think about that when you're actually drinking, but you don't spend all the time sitting having glasses of wine with people. You do other things now. I'm more present for my kids. We do much more activities together. So definitely the relationship with them has increased and benefited because I'm just there. I'm present, you know, whereas before it would be like you might go somewhere and you might do an activity, but then it'd be like, well, are we going to go over there and have a glass of wine, you know? So the pri your priorities change, you know.
It is. So you would recommend the alcohol-free life, Carmelan? 10 out of 10.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah,
I
it
don't
is.
think I'd go back. I couldn't imagine myself ever going back now.
Yeah, I'm your sister here. It is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it's a superpower, as Kyle
Yeah.
Richards said.
Oh, is that what Kyle said?
Kyle Richards said it's a superpower to be a non-drinker.
Oh my God, you're a Real Housewives of Beverly Hills fan like myself.
Absolutely. Real Housewives of anything.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, I'm the same. Come here, Carmelan. Thank you. I have absolutely loved this. Tell us if anybody wants to connect with you to get in contact, where can they find you?
I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, so you're welcome to publish my details. Yeah, they can get me there.
Thank you, and thank you for being such a beautiful, well-loved member of our community. We absolutely adore you all.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
No More Booze, the podcast, is produced, mixed, and mastered at the studios of Irish Audio Drama. For more information, visit irishaudiodrama.com.